CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Sexy in Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
On the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly, red blue lights flash us from behind. Loud voice booming, please step out onto the line. Belly bridgeways of comfort, Cena just hides her eyes. Policeman taps the shades, is that a Chevy 69? How bizarre! How bizarre! How bizarre! Destination unknown as we're pulling for some gas. Officially placed a poster reveals a smile from the back. Elephants and acrobats, lions, snakes, monkey. Village speaks righteous, Sister Cena says funky. How bizarre. How bizarre, how bizarre.
Ooh baby, ooh baby. It's making me crazy.
The elephants lift town. People jump and jive, and the clowns are stuck around. TV news and cameras, there's choppers in the sky. Marines, police, reporters ask where, far and wide. Belly yells, we're out of here. Cena says right on. Making moves and starting grooves before they knew we were gone. Jumps into the Chevy, headed for big lights. Wanna know the rest? Hey, by the rights. How bizarre. How bizarre.
Ooh, baby.
Ooh, baby.
It's making me crazy.
It's making me crazy.
Every time I look around. Every time I look around.
Every time I look around.
Every time I look around. It's in my face. It's in my face.
Making me crazy.
Every time I look around. Every time I look around.
Every time I look around.
Every time I look around. It's in my face.
That was a little bit of OMC from How Bizarre, which reminds me of just hot summer days of being young and having some fun. I'm still young, maybe not quite as young as riding carelessly along Robson Street and drag racing through Stanley Park. And oops, I probably shouldn't say that on air. If you're joining us right now, you're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or perhaps you could be listening to the podcast tomorrow, but however you you've decided to spend the hour with us. We're really, really, really glad to have you. One of the things we talk about is sexuality, and that is a really, really key component of being human. And I think it's really important that we learn to embrace that in a healthy, happy, wonderful manner. And I've got a very special guest on tonight, and we're going to be chatting about embracing sexuality as a singledom and coupledom, and of course after babydom, which I think in terms of the transitions and the evolutions in life, it is a really big thing, and we need to really think about it because we're constantly evolving and it's really important to check in. And I couldn't think of a better person to have on the show for this topic. I've got Kim Ariami on the show, and she is a life coach, and she also teaches these wonderful salons all around town about sexuality, and she's a fantastic person, so I'm very excited to have her on, and just to talk about the work, because this is a one-dom, coupledom, and after babydom. That's a lot of different stages in life, so I'm very glad to have Kim on the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
Thank you. Well, it's a very hot summer day.
Finally, I'm so glad that summer is finally here.
Me too. I'm really, really glad. And it's one of those things in terms of sexuality where I don't know what your thoughts are in terms of just sexuality and why it's so important to embrace it as a human being.
Well, I think that our sexual energy is our creative life force energy. And you see that everywhere in our culture, people are focused on sex. You see it in the media, you see it in advertising, you see it all over the place. And yet in our culture, we have this paradoxical taboo around it. You know, it's kind of like a bipolar relationship towards sex, where it's everywhere, but you're not really permitted to have a healthy, positive relationship to it. So I guess I think it's really important because I think it's part of our vital life force and energy. And it's best to be more open about it, to celebrate it, to learn more about it, and have it as an ongoing part of your life. Since, you know, one of the biggest parts of being human is finding a mate, having a family, and part of the, we talked about this earlier, having a mate is this idea that when you marry someone, you're committing to have sex with them for the rest of your life. So why would it? Since you put energy into making that sex as amazing as you could.
Especially if you're going to be with them for the rest of your life. It's very key.
Yeah.
And I like how we talked about that earlier. It was, and just to just get our listeners up to speed, was the fact that when I was chatting to Kim earlier this afternoon, is the fact that we spend a lot of our life looking for that mate. So even when we're single, even if we're still dating ourselves, we're still looking on that level, and it's like, what do we want in our life? What's going to be that next part? Because we're here to hopefully have happy, healthy sexual relations, quite frankly. So, and one of the things we talked about as well is when you are on your own, it's really important to do some evaluating with yourself and seeing where you're at in terms of that before you get yourself into a relationship. Even though, of course, as you're in a relationship, a lot of things will come to head. No pun intended. And it's important. And speaking of coming to head, earlier today I was chatting to Kim, and we're talking about how to give great head workshops, for example. And she had some really interesting thoughts about it, which I thought was really cool. And one of the things you brought up was the fact that instead of just teaching, like, for example, putting toothpaste to make it tinglier because you don't like the way semen tastes, it's actually getting to the root of the issue as opposed to putting a Band-Aid on it. And I just love that, that you go into depth about that in terms of the teaching, where it's just like, why don't you like giving head? What can we do to change that?
I think that a lot of sex books, for example, that are out there on the market are how-to guides. Like, how do you give a good blowjob? You know, use this technique, use hot-cold technique. Really, the issue, like, when people when people come to see me as a sex intimacy coach, they aren't coming to learn how to give a good blowjob. They're coming because they don't want to. And so what I'm trying to get to with them is, what's going to make you enjoy that, to fall in love with it, and why don't you want to do that, and what's going on beneath that? So it's about getting deeper into it, and then I think there's a way to actually fall in love with every sex act. Like, for me, you know, I used to like giving head. I enjoyed the pleasure that it gave my partners, and but there was a point in my relationship with somebody where I was so into this person, I just wanted to devour every inch of him, where I actually fell in love with his cock. I fell in love with him, and then I fell in love with his cock as a separate entity. And so I began to miss both of them when they weren't around. And so with him, the act of giving head, I absolutely loved it. I totally loved it. And from that point forward, it's been something I've always loved to do. So it's about finding an entryway into those acts that make them really pleasurable, enjoyable, and that you love to do them. Because I really don't believe, there was a sex guide that I picked up and was looking at, and that's what they recommended, that if you don't like giving head, you should put toothpaste in your mouth, and that'll obscure the taste for you. And I thought, that is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. Because, you know, really, can you imagine, like, giving a blowjob and then stopping to grab the toothpaste?
Excuse me, honey.
Like, it's ludicrous. And then it doesn't solve the problem. You know, both people would be self-conscious, and then you're going to still have this problem forever unless you try to fix it and come from it from a different way. And so in my salons, what I try to get to is I throw in technique, but the most important thing is why. Like, why is oral sex good for you? For example, in the Taoist philosophy. So the Taoists have been studying sexuality for 5,000 years. Mm-hmm. So back when they were also pioneering their theories in acupuncture and herbal medicine, they were also looking at sexual medicine. So for them, sex wasn't this sort of, taboo thing. It was something that you did as a normal part of keeping yourself healthy and keeping your relationship vibrant. And so they actually distilled it to the point where they figured that different sexual positions would stimulate different organ and meridian systems in the body. Like, for example, reverse cowgirl with a woman stimulates her kidneys. It brings lots of really strong energy into her kidneys. And if you have a deficient kidney issue, you should have lots of reverse cowgirl for a man. And then they also found reflexology points on the genitals. And so
I was just going to ask about that, because there is a book called Sexual Reflexology, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, and that's written by Mantak Chia, who's probably the world's foremost Taoist sexuality scholar. And so they've mapped out points. So the head of a man's penis is the heart point. Down the shaft are his large intestine, kidney, liver, and then his balls are his glands. So the glands that you have in the brain, like the pituitary, the what's the other P gland? The pituitary.
I wish I had my old co-host on. She is actually a sex educator, so she knows the technical terms for everything.
Okay, well, that stimulates a man's glands. And so you start to break down sex from these different approaches to get people inspired from another perspective. And then I also spend a lot of time persuading people that their sex life is a really important piece of their life, and then it can give you so much energy. Like, when you have a healthy, thriving, powerful emotional and sexual connection with your partner, that's an energy source. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you were talking about children and couples and what happens when you get married and, you know, when things happen down the road. And my belief is not that, you know, after a few years, it's a natural thing that your sex life will diminish. I don't believe that for a moment. I think that what happens is that couples, initially when you're courting someone and you're getting to know them, you put your best foot forward. You really focus your attention on that relationship. You focus on your appearance. You set special time aside to be with that person. You're very conscious about how you present yourself. And I don't think those are bad things. I think that's how we ought to put that degree of consciousness and attention into our relationship ongoing. But the problem is, once we've gotten into a commitment, usually, or into a routine, we drop that level of attention. And so what I constantly work with people about, especially if they're in a long-term relationship and they feel that they've lost that chemistry, is prioritizing sex and the relationship again.
Okay. So in other words, would this be like not taking them for granted, for example?
Yep, that's one piece, but it's also about consciously making time for the relationship. So I tell people that, say, once a week minimum, you have a sex date. So you set aside 3 hours where your only your only goal is to have sex. It's not to have dinner together. It's not to watch a movie. It's not to be go for a walk on the beach. It's actually to have sex. And so,
I was just going to ask, so how do you get that so it doesn't end up being like on Saturday afternoons with the lights off, the curtains drawn, and the door slammed shut, basically, so it's the same time every time? So it ends up becoming routine, missionary position every time, or maybe reverse cowgirl every time.
Well, but I think that's another issue. I think the first part is just carving out that time. And then it's sort of like if you're committing to getting fit, right? And you say, well, you know, I want to get fit by the end of August. August, and maybe, you know, I'll get to the gym when I can over the next couple of months. And by the time August rolls around, maybe you've gone to the gym twice and you're in no better shape. However, if you commit to the process and you say, okay, I'm going to get a trainer next week and I'm going to be working out 3 times a week, no matter what, by the time August rolls around, you'll have an amazing fit looking physique. Mm-hmm. But the only way you got there is because you committed to it and you made it happen. And so for me, setting that time aside isn't so much, it's not about locking, I mean, I guess there's a sense of routine about it, but there's a benefit to it. So the other part of your question is, how do you not stagnate, I guess, is what you're saying, is that I think your sexual exploration is an ongoing evolution. And that the way that you think about, say, your career, you know, you might think about these phases of your career, that it's like a 40-year commitment that you're making, right, to what you're going to be doing in your life for 50 years or whatever it is, but that you know it's going to be there in your life for that many years. And we ought to be thinking about our sex lives in the same way, that it's an ongoing process and development and evolution. And the same way in our work, we would stagnate if we didn't take extra courses or do extra education or get promoted into a new job where we're out of our comfort zone and we have to learn something new. Apply all of that back to your sexual relationship, where you might do courses together, go to workshops, explore fantasies, bring in sex toys, like any, you know, myriad of things that you can bring into the space that keep things evolving.
Now, that makes more sense then. And going back to how you described it, as like if you're trying to work out and by August you wanted to be in a certain shape or lose a certain amount of weight, it's kind of like working out, where every 6 weeks, usually most trainers will recommend revisit your routine and let's change it up, because otherwise the body gets comfortable and you won't see the results and the benefit as you did at the beginning, because the body's adjusted. So in that sense, just again, keep revisiting, seeing what other types of workouts you can add on based on. So it'd be similar in terms of, like, as a parallel in terms of the sexuality.
I agree. And that it's something that, as I said, you want to keep putting energy into and keep putting fresh energy into. And another element to that is, usually when people have started to separate sexually, there's an emotional distance as well. And so part of bridging that gap is the sexual physical part, but it's also the emotional vulnerability part. And for me, the key to fantastic sex is, I call it, a combination of emotional vulnerability and sexual vulnerability. Because you can be emotionally vulnerable with somebody, but not really sexually or physically vulnerable. And you can be sexually vulnerable, like really surrender to somebody, like say you have a fantastic one night stand, but you don't open yourself emotionally, right? Yeah. And to me, the magic really happens, the kind of alchemy that can take your entire lives to another level, is when you have that sense of surrender. So when you've really opened up to somebody and you let them into you, you let them see you, you are there for that person, both, you know, sexually and emotionally, that's where you get this amazing process happens, where, you know, that idea that you're stronger as a unit than you are individually.
That makes sense. It's almost like a mini mastermind group in terms of your relationship.
And that said, I think it's still very important to, despite the fact that you can really surrender and let go in your relationship, it's still really important to nurture your autonomy. So, you know, you were asking kind of about this singledom thing, and I think we can talk about as you're a single person, how to prepare for a relationship. But even in a relationship, I like to say that there's three entities in a relationship. There's me, there's you, and then there's the relationship. And how are we all growing? So I want to be doing things that nurture my growth and development. I want to be supporting things that nurture your growth and development. And then what are we doing together that further the growth and development of the relationship? You know, and that's, again, like coming back to time set aside and, you know, maybe weekends away, sex dates, things that we can do that basically further that growth. But when it comes back to the individual, you know, there have been studies done that say that people are happier in their relationships the more they honor themselves, right? And so, you know, it's important that we're still doing things that keep us anchored in who we are and our personal life goals and what we feel that we're here to achieve. Our vision in life can be separate and ought to be separate from our partnership vision.
So it's almost like as if two grapevines basically going side by side, where they don't intermix, but they go side by side through life. That makes sense, where they're each its own entity.
Well, they can. I think they can twirl and entwine. They just don't choke each other out.
That's a very good way of putting that. I like that.
Uh-huh.
I think I originally got that from the prophet, but I'm not quite sure.
Oh, yeah. Lots of good things in there.
There are some really good things in there. What would you say in terms of, because you've mentioned with the salons, how would you describe them? Like, say I'm coming for my first time. Paint me a picture of what I'd see.
Well, I've modeled them on the concept of, you know, earlier century salons. Like in the, even from the 16th century, there was this concept of salons where you'd have gatherings of people who were generally more intellectual, but there was meant to be, you'd come to this gathering and there'd be wine and food and music, and then people, and the idea was conversation and learning and expansion. It wasn't about getting wasted.
Yes.
It was about getting there and learning something, expanding your vision of the world. And so the idea of having this in a sexual context is to create a space where I give a presentation. So I have a multimedia presentation that I, kind of is the focal point of the evening, but it's encouraged as to be an interactive dialogue. So I want people to come into this space. They're free to ask questions throughout the presentation, to share their own experiences. I want this to be a really open, safe, and free space for people to say anything that they want and to feel that they can ask any questions that they want, and for people to share experiences, because they're really, you know, think, where is there in our society where you can actually have an open conversation about sex? You know, in sex ed in school, we're basically taught that sex can kill you, can give you diseases, and sex can get you pregnant. And that's about it. Like, when, you know, we talk about sex ed, but there's no concept of pleasure or, you know, like,
yes,
how you might learn to better experience sexual intimacy or ecstasy with yourself or with your partner. Nothing like that at all. So most people stumble along trying to figure it out. And most people don't put time and energy into figuring it out. And then they get it to a certain point in their development, in their lives, in their relationship, where their sex life is stalling, and then they need help. So the evenings are, I serve wine and I serve sushi and I serve truffles to create a more relaxed environment, so that it's not me as the teacher and people learning. It's that we're all in this together. I share a lot of my personal experiences. And as soon as you have somebody open up the floor, that gives everybody permission to ask things that they probably would never ask, even of their friends. You know, people come either as singles or they come as a couple to these evenings. And so generally the way I structure when I do a series, I'll start with, it's the multi-orgasmic couple. And so I talk about the three different types of female orgasms, how men can become multi-orgasmic, and how to connect with your partner. And then I do the art of pleasuring a man, because women tend to be more comfortable coming to evenings like this, bringing their girlfriends, because that's more of a woman-only night. And then they go home, they have experiences with their husbands. I get husbands calling to thank me the next day, and then they send their husbands, because their husbands now feel more comfortable with the idea of coming into a space like that.
It's interesting you say that, actually. I had Margot Danilis from Liberty Education on, and she was mentioning with the marriage boot camps and things like that for the relational piece. It was hard to get the men in there, but once they are there, they just totally committed and gave it 110%, if there's such thing as 110%, but and really committed to it. But sometimes, because women are motivated by fear and men tend to be motivated by, like, shame, where they'll go out of their way to avoid feeling that, as will women try to avoid feeling fear. And sometimes if with sexuality, just as a society, I applaud you for what you're doing, because I think a lot of people have a lot of shame attached to it, and whether that's because of roots from the Victorian era and the fact that that still persists in our society, or the fact that we've used it, as you're saying, like sex can kill you in the school system, where we're taught from a very early age and it's almost used as a control mechanism. So there's a lot of shame and stigma still attached to it, even though our media embraces it and really encourages us to have sex, because hence that expression, sex sells.
Yeah, it's a bizarre dichotomy, isn't it? Like, I still have a hard time figuring it out, you know? And I think that's why people have such this inner conflict around it, right? Where they can't quite give themselves permission. And I think that's I think one of the things that people comment about when they come to the salons is that they're amazed that we're having this level of open conversation, you know, where I make it. And I'm extremely comfortable talking about any aspect of sex. And so I'm really comfortable about it, which gives them permission to be really comfortable about it. And so it's kind of like, because I wanted these events or these evenings to also be a visceral learning experience for people. So it's not just a bunch of theory and ideas. It's people getting hit on many different levels. Like, I use really provocative images in the multimedia presentation of people having sex, different poses being illustrated, but really beautiful, artful, erotic imagery. Because, again, even the way sex is depicted visually in our culture, you've got hardcore porn that's really like, you know, there's no artfulness in it generally. There's not much authenticity. The lighting is crappy. The people look like exactly like what's happening. They're getting paid to have sex.
And internet porn is one of the number one addictions worldwide.
Yeah, and I can see why. Well, I mean, it's designed for a very quick fix to bring you to orgasm and get you off, and then you turn it off, right? And then you have, like, very sterile depictions of nude bodies, like in some ads or even in some art, where it's almost asexualized, right? Or fashion often asexualizes women or people. And so there's actually, like, a very small cachet of photographers out there who do erotic work that's extremely beautiful and artful, and the people actually look like they're authentically enjoying being sexual. And so I use images like that as well to help illustrate things and to get people hit viscerally, right? Like, they look at those images and it's like, oh yeah, like, that's what I want. That describes that energy of what I want. And that helps to remind them of what they can have.
Which, that makes sense, because people get 90% of their information from what they see and 10% from what they hear. So it's great that you've got it multimedia as well, just to bring that in a beautiful way to people.
Yeah, and to show that there is this niche, right, where you can have something that's really hot and beautiful. And that's the kind of energy that I'm trying to convey around sex in general, right, is that I think another a huge thing, like you mentioned shame and guilt, it's this judgment around sex. Like, that's one of the biggest issues that people have to overcome, and mostly women. I think men are given a lot more permission in our culture to indulge their sexuality, to explore, and yet women are pretty much labeled, like, there's still this insane archetype, the whore virgin dichotomy in Madonna whore. And women, I think, have to go through a trial of fire to really own their sexual selves, because for a woman to be sexually voracious, she's pretty much a whore. That's there really doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground. I think it's getting better, but I think women within themselves have to bypass this fear of judgment to really claim and empower themselves sexually. And so the people that I know, both men and women, have had to go through that kind of intense process of self-discovery with their sexuality. The people that I know who are really sexually confident and really sexually self-aware, they worked really hard to get to that place. They weren't just born like that. And they didn't just, you know, take a course and suddenly they got there. They'd had to do a lot of work around it. And that's why I talk about it as being this ongoing process, because, you know, like I said, people that I know, they've been working at it consciously for 20 years. Because I think so much of what's programmed in us and how we respond sexually is unconscious. And so it's learning how to bring that conscious. And you see that illustrated, you know, so clearly in the Catholic Church, where people are being sexually suppressed. And then the more you suppress something, it comes out in all these obscene and totally untoward ways, right? That are completely inappropriate.
That being said, though, I've wondered about Mother Teresa for a very long time. I mean, that is a compliment, because she did such great work. And one of the things...
Are you sure about that? There's a lot of media that she was very mean, and she tortured some of the...
Volunteers,
yeah. No, no, the kids, actually, that she was ruthless and vindictive and really... Yeah, so there's a whole other aspect to Mother Teresa that isn't widely publicized, but there's information out there that she had a very dark side. So anyway, were you getting at...
I was actually getting it in terms of, because she's been known for a lot of the good work she did, and I always thought it was because of the fact she was a nun and she didn't have sex, so she basically had to put that energy somewhere. So, in terms of the... Because you mentioned at the very top of this where it's the life force, it's the creation, and that's where that birth is. And if it doesn't have a vessel where it can go, it, well, I guess it does make people mean and grumpy and unhappy, and it can be toxic to us, but it can be funneled sometimes.
I agree, but I think it has to be a conscious funneling. Mm-hmm. Some people do it unconsciously, so I don't think that's, you know, a total rule there, but I think, at least from the Taoist perspective, they talk about, you know, they don't think it's right, even if you're pursuing a spiritual path, to deny yourself sexually. They don't think it has to be that way. However, they do talk about taking your sexual energy and consciously recirculating it in your body so that it can be brought upward, like up through the chakras, up to your spiritual centers, and transformed into other energy, right? So most people, they get sexually aroused. All their sexual energy is just locked in at their genitals.
So
they
get excited, friction.
They have an orgasm, and they eject all that energy out of their body. And the whole tantric Taoist philosophy is about taking that energy back up into your system so that you have it to regenerate and use yourself, right? Because if every time you ejaculate, or at least for a man, when he ejaculates, you have the potential to generate new life. Their idea was that you take that creative energy back into yourself and you use it. So I think that you can do that even when you're single, but I think you can do it much better when you're conscious about doing it. So it's a form of, they called it sexual kung fu, but it's, you know, it's working with your energy manipulation, tai chi, whatever you want to call it, taking that energy back into yourself. And they actually, you know, there's breathing techniques that you can use, really simple breathing techniques of pumping your PC muscle and imagining energy on your inhalation going up your spine and then down the front of your body on your exhalation. And you're simply trying to take that energy out of that lower chakra space and bring it up into higher centers in your body.
I can feel that, actually. It's amazing what you can do when you're just sitting still. But
yeah, well, I think we all have that. We all have these energy meridians in our body, and the way we don't put any attention on them in our culture. You know, if you do martial arts, you do yoga, I think you start to get a sense of those energy channels again, but you have to consciously put your attention there. And that's what the whole tantric Taoist study was about. I mean, the biggest word that I think stands out is conscious.
Yes.
Right? Is consciously taking that energy and utilizing it for yourself, moving it in your body, exchanging it with your partner. And again, that brings us back to that idea that your sexual relationship is this huge source of energy, because when you exchange that energy with your partner, you're feeding each other and you're nourishing each other. And another element to that, they talk about yin and yang, right? And so yin energy, like, we crave that other polarity in the partner that we have. So, you know, a woman, say if she has more feminine energy, and this can apply in many ways. You can have a man who has more feminine energy. This also applies to gay and lesbian relationships, because one partner can have more feminine energy, the other more masculine energy. And for there to be chemistry, that's really what you need to have. You need to have a feminine and a masculine, the same way you have magnets, right? You have a negative and a positive charge. But if you have two positives, they repel each other. And sometimes that's actually a source of when people's sexual chemistry dissolves, is because somehow they've become neutralized with each other. So maybe the woman has, you know, and this happens actually a lot in our modern culture, where women are animating more masculine energy. They're out in the world, they're pursuing their career, they're, you know, being very driven and powerful in the world. And so that's a very masculine quality. And these are archetypes, right? Not stereotypes. These are like energetic yin and yang qualities that we're talking about. And then as a reaction to, say, feminism over the years, men have become more in touch with their feelings. They're trying to become more in touch with their sensitive sides. And these are all good things, but the end result is you can have a neutralization. So men are becoming more feminine, women are becoming more masculine, and then nobody wants to have sex anymore.
And it's interesting you say that, actually. I had John Gray on the show, who originally wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, about his new book, which was actually all about hormones, and he actually speaks to that. But he was actually mentioning, in terms of we as a society have higher levels of cortisol, which is the stress hormone.
Right.
And men and women actually have huge reduction in terms of testosterone as well as estrogen. And that was one of the things he attributed. But I think it's both, actually. Just listening to what you're saying, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, and then the way to rectify that is you don't, it doesn't mean that you have to change the fact that you've developed those qualities, is that especially when you step into your intimate space, you slip into that energy that's more dominant in you. So typically for women, it's more feminine energy, and then for men, it's more masculine energy. And I liken it to the example of, say, if your guy comes up to you and says, hey, I was kind of hoping that maybe we could have sex tonight. Or if he...
Does
that make you want to have sex? Or if a guy threw you up against the wall, pinned your knees, threw your wrists above your head, kissed your neck, and then threw you over his shoulder and said, I'm going to fuck you senseless, and dragged you into the bedroom, or carried you into the bedroom, what would turn you on more? I mean, it's about feeling that strength and that power and that confidence, and those are masculine qualities.
And the confidence is the key thing that you said in that sentence, which I love. And I agree with you, the whole caveman thing where it's like, you're mine. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly.
There is something really, really sexy about it. And for all you listeners out there, this is perhaps partly where the rape fantasy comes from. But with that said, I just want to add on there that it is with somebody that you trust already and where you've already created a safe space where you can play within it. So this is not to encourage all you listeners out there to go out and rape women, or women raping men, or men raping men, or women raping women, or whatever. But basically that you create safe spaces with whoever you're having sex with and being comfy.
Right. And that I think in an established relationship, especially, you have that flexibility.
Thank you.
To expand those parameters and really exaggerate those roles or those energies, right? And that's part of the play that I'm talking about, or that discovery or exploration, is that you can play with those energies. And so if you have that situation that might be neutralized in bed, is where, or in foreplay, like whatever leading up to that, and even in bed, that you want to start to exaggerate that. So women, it's about learning how to step more into that feminine, receptive, surrender, opening. And then for men, to really rise up into that confident, more dominant energy. Mm-hmm. And both people get fed by doing that, right? Like the woman gets fed by really slipping into that place of, I'm just going to let go. I'm going to let go of control. And you can always reverse that, right? Like the woman can be playing the part of taking control. But I think, generally we have these places where we're more comfortable.
Yeah.
And then you nourish each other so that the woman then gets to really feel this strong, passionate, masculine energy in her man and from her man. And that is something that balances her out. And the same thing goes the opposite
for it.
Way.
So it's almost healing in a lot of ways.
Definitely healing, yeah.
We are going to take a really tiny short break, and when we get back, I want to touch in terms of after the babydom comes. So, because I've had a few callers talking about that, and even on Twitter, actually, had a few people who were quite excited about that because I just had children recently. So you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM CITR. We will be right back.
My name is Natasha. I am a robot now. I am playing with my breast again. Nothing to do, nothing to do. Sometimes I listen to Misery Hour with Hans Close Wednesday at 11 before midnight. I don't think I like it.
Hey, Quentin and Dave from Chips with Everything.
Hey, Heather from Queer FM, what's up?
Well, you know how Bryce, our program director here at CITR, has kind of been riding all of our asses about making promos for our shows?
Cha! Yes!
Well, you know, I was thinking, like, over at the CBC, they have this woman named Promo Girl, and she comes on once an hour and tells everybody what's coming up, and it's usually kind of theatrical, and she has, like, a really sexy voice and stuff. So anyway, I was thinking that I'd really like to have a promo boy, or like, promo boys. Would you guys be up for that?
Sure. What do we have to do?
Just tell people about Queer FM, really.
Okay.
Queer FM features news, views, current affairs, arts and music. For, of course, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered communities and all its allies. Heather Kitchen hosts Queer FM Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on CITR 101.9.
CITR 101.9 FM is proud to support the Vancouver Pride Society in the 2010 Pride season. with great events leading up to Pride, including Gay Day at Playland, July 17th, Picnic in the Park, July 24th, and the Friday Night Dance Party on Davie Street to kick off Pride Weekend. The Pride Parade starts at 12 p.m. on Sunday, August 1st, and the party continues until 5 p.m. at the Pride Festival at Sunset Beach. Join us for an incredible celebration of culture and diversity. For more information and event listings, visit vancouverpride.ca.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
And we're back. And if you're just joining us, we were listening to some Bananarama, a little old school for all of you out there, a little bit of Venus, which I thought was very appropriate since I've got a wonderful Venus in the studio tonight. If you're just joining us, I'm chatting to Kim Arimani, and we have been chatting in regards to embracing your sexuality in terms of singledom, coupledom, and après babydom. So, and I hope you get to listen to the podcast if you're just joining us, because we've come up with a lot of really cool stuff. And before the break, we were chatting in regards to about babydom. And just in regards to, I was just mentioning that there's been a lot of people who are curious in terms of the after babydom. And I am pronouncing Kim's last name very incorrectly. So it's Anami, Anami. And so she has got all sorts of salons going on in town about sexuality. And we're going to chat a little bit now about the after babydom. So, because it's a really big time in someone's life, having a new life to take care of, and sometimes with hormones and everything. And as one of my girlfriends described yesterday in terms of postpartum depression, breastfeeding a baby sometimes is literally, quote-unquote, sucking the life out of you. So, anything that you'd recommend in terms of with couples that are going through just the adjustment of having a newborn in the house?
I think it's multifaceted. I mean, first of all, I commend your friend for breastfeeding, because I think it's really important and a wonderful thing to do. And I guess I would be wondering if she's feeling exhausted from it. Like, where else can she be replenishing? Because I don't think it has to be that way. Breastfeeding can actually give a big high to people. And yeah, I mean, it actually stimulates oxytocin, which makes you feel really content and happy. And so if there's exhaustion going on, I'd honestly be also looking at a naturopathic perspective to see how this person might be able to supplement physically. Because yeah, it does take a lot out of you. But if you have, if you're kind of compensating for that in terms of your diet and the kind of healthy food that you eat, extra supplements, things that you can be doing to build up your strength, then it really shouldn't, because think, in nature, right, it shouldn't be something that the mother is left totally vulnerable and exhausted from breastfeeding her young, right? That doesn't really make sense. And so to me, something, if someone's feeling that exhausted, something can be off physiologically. And then hormonally, yeah, you have oxytocin kicks in, which is what you have also after orgasm and sex, right? You feel blissful and bonded and close to somebody. And sometimes women say that, they feel so content with that, that they're not necessarily craving sex. But a couple things happen. When you aren't having sex, you've had a gap where you haven't had sex for a while, you stop wanting it. And so the way to kickstart your sex drive is, in a way, to make yourself have it, is just to start having it. And then when you start having it again, you start to want it again. And then there's all kinds of, additional hormonal and neurotransmitter cocktails that get released through having sex. You get dopamine, for example. And you can work consciously with these. So when you're wanting to have sex, you're feeling desirous. When you're moving towards orgasm, your dopamine is kicking in. So you're actually getting a cocaine high rush in that, was you're climbing that mountain. And then once you hit orgasm, so this is actually an argument for tantric sex, is because once you hit orgasm, then you get something called prolactin that kicks in, which is to antidote the dopamine. Because if your dopamine kept going and it didn't stop, it would be like you would just keep wanting. That's addiction, right? Like that's why people get addicted to things. So prolactin kicks in to slow that down, and it actually makes you want to withdraw. It makes you want to have separation from your partner. So if you're trying to avert that, that means that you could practice tantric sex, where you basically get to the edge of orgasm, you ride that wave for a very long time without having an external climax, right? Like, as in the tantric philosophy, you can learn how to orgasm internally. So you keep your orgasm, you have an orgasm. For men, you don't ejaculate. For women can have more orgasms and not have so much of those side effects. But even for women, I find you can lose a little bit of energy through excessive orgasm. So you can have full body internal orgasms where you just don't lose as much energy. So that's one aspect of addressing it. You can actually study your it's not a difficult study, but you could look at them and figure out how to make them work, or almost like manipulate them for your advantage.
Wow. What would you recommend in terms of trying to make the time to have sex? Because that was one of the things you mentioned at the top of the hour, regardless of whether or not you're singledom, whether it's through masturbatory, whether it's through coupledom, and of course you're remembering to stay a couple even after you've added a new life force to your life. Yeah. So
well, we in the West, we have this incredible strange situation where babies are raised either by one person or by two people, mm-hmm. when really it does take a whole community to properly raise a child. Like, I spent 2 years living in Bali in Indonesia, where villages literally raise a child. You'll have 30 people, an extended family of 30 people living within a compound together, and everybody raises that baby. Everybody. Nobody looks tired. No one's exhausted. The baby's happy. The mother's happy. Everybody's happy. And here, it's really, I think, about etching out as much, replicating that concept as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And so you have your family on board, your friends on board. If there's any way that you can create a space, like say on the weekend, even for a couple hours, where you have a relative take your baby, you have a friend, you do an exchange of some kind, and then even trying to time your sleeping patterns. And so that if you get your baby down by, say, 8 o'clock, that you've got another couple hours while you're still awake before you go to sleep as well. And instead of watching television or watching movies or doing chores, you know, catching up on something, that's your intimate time with your partner. And again, even if you think that you feel exhausted, one of the things I say to people is have sex. It will give you energy. Hmm. Like, when you've had amazing sex, like amazing cataclysmic sex, do you feel exhausted and like, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. That was such a mistake. Or are you floating, you know, and walking around, and it's like things that would have totally stressed you out now totally roll off your back. So that it's about changing your mindset partly as well, to think okay. that sex will give you energy. And once you start to put energy into it, it's like exercising, right? Like going for a run. You might be like, oh, I feel tired. I don't really want to go for a run right now. But you force yourself to do it, and then in the, you know, 20 minutes, you know, the endorphins kick in, all these mm-hmm. other neurotransmitters and hormones kick in that make you feel amazing. And then you go for your hour run, and you're so high off of doing that, you feel less stressed, your body feels good, you feel good because you did it. That's the same thing with sex, is that mm-hmm. you might initially have to get your body and your system back in that idea that this is going to give me energy, this is good for my relationship. If my relationship is fed, it's going to give me more energy. And then just stepping into that space. And once you get into it, and it's not, I hear that a lot, where couples, they've created this space within, you know, the relationship, and then it gets hard to want to have sex again. Mm-hmm. And then they have to almost force themselves to do it. And once they do, that's when they're glowing. Like, I've had couples say, come back to see me the next week, and they're both glowing. They both have this juicy, radiant energy, where the week before they were like leaning over on their elbows trying to keep their eyes open because they're so exhausted mm-hmm. just from the stress of raising their children and working. But you can again, it's persuading somebody and a couple that having sex is really going to be life enhancing and beneficial for their mm-hmm. relationship and for their energy.
And I guess that's another thing too, when the children get a little bit older after babydom, how to adjust in terms of just acknowledging where it's like mommy and daddy need some time too.
Well, I think you just make that, you set that up, right? That's going to be then a normal thing, is that, yeah, this is mommy and daddy time. And you take that space, whether it's, generally that means getting childcare. I think when your baby is still small, you can have sex more because you don't have to worry about them being around or not around. When your children are older and toddlers, you think about getting childcare. But I think you have to be very resourceful about finding ways to share childcare, exchange childcare, but have a support system in place. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's around parenting and giving yourself space to get more energy so you have energy to give back.
Got it. So what's next for you?
Well, right now I'm focusing mainly on the salons, and there's a bunch of them over the summertime. I've got one coming up next week at Raw Canvas in Yale Town. And then I have several of them at Tarte Boutique. So I don't know if you've mentioned Tarte before.
I have, actually. Okay, I've and on Twitter as well, where I was mentioning when I was telling them last week.
That's right, yeah.
That I was having you on the show. I was like, it's neat. And I actually, after I spoke to you originally about booking you for the show, I actually poked my head in at Granville Island just to see what it was all about. And it's very beautiful, and they've got some neat stuff in there too.
Well, there's a trend, I think, internationally towards erotic luxury. Like, you have these sex toy designers that are putting out not scary plastic toxic things called the enforcer, but beautiful, you know, beautifully designed sex toys that are ergonomic, they're body conscious and body safe, and the recyclable motors, you know, that, and they're, you know, gorgeous objet d'art, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that, and Tarte has those things. They have beautiful lingerie, they have incredible books about sex, and that's the kind of place you can go with your lover, as I was saying, to explore new things or to think, get inspiration about new things to try. Mm-hmm. They have an amazingly knowledgeable staff, and it's not like, you know, wearing a trench coat and going into a little shop on Kingsway. You're going into this beautiful luxury emporium that's about tasteful, elegant, intelligent sexuality.
Mm-hmm. So where can people find you?
My website is bodaciouslifecoaching.com, and there's also information about the salons. I call them the Sexual Savant Salon Series, and so there's a tab on that. I'm on Facebook as well, and at Kim Anami on Twitter. So the most information is on the website, and then there's sign up about the salons that are upcoming and more descriptions about them as well. So in the next month, we have the multi-orgasmic couple, and then in August, the art of pleasuring a man, the art of pleasuring a woman, and then the multi-orgasmic couple again. Well, you wanted to know about vaginal weightlifting, which we won't have time to get into.
I'll have to get you back on, because I'm very curious, and I would have loved to have taken that workshop. I was very curious about that with the jade eggs, and I was like, wow, that sounds very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very interesting, because I do. We'll have to do a whole show on G-spot orgasm, actually, which would be really, really cool.
You can do G-spots in men and women.
I didn't know men had G-spots.
The prostate gland
in
the anus is the male G-spot. Interestingly located, given our very ass-tabooed culture and homophobic culture.
But it doesn't score it out, though, does it?
Well, prostate fluid contributes to the composition of semen, and so there's some of that liquid goes into the semen. Yeah.
That is definitely topic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I will definitely have to have you back on again.
G-spots and the lost art of finger fucking. Fingers are the best tools to hit G-spots in men and women.
That leaves me food for thought. Before as we leave, I'm almost speechless, to be honest with you. So, wow. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Next week, we will be back at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.